Remember when you were starting your career or starting something fresh? Or maybe you're starting now and it was exciting and new and you were learning and growing. You also thought that the company and your manager would help you guide your career path. Well, how's that going? My name is Todd Doherty and I host a podcast called Manage Me. I have 30 years of client, product, and operations experience from startups to retail to Fortune 100 companies. Listen in as I share real-world stories of business and life with solutions you can use. I'll have occasional fantastic guests that will share their insights as well. Come join me and learn real-world guides on how to be the most successful you and manage you. That's Manage Me Podcast and managemepodcast@gmail.com. Okay. Welcome back to Manage Me Podcast. This is Todd Doherty, managemecoaching.com, Todd at managemecoaching.com. Season three, we continue to talk with some fantastic guests. I'm super excited about you meeting my guest today. This season is dedicated to coaching, leadership, all about people who have made a shift in their life, hearing their journey and hear how they're contributing and kind of in a way giving back and using their expertise in a maybe a different way. So without further ado, Patrick Coyle, founder of Novus Proximus, is here with us, referred to me actually by Sarah Bolin and Rich Cooper from Leading Human. So love how this sort of network of coaches and consulting and leaders are forming. I need to figure out how to leverage that for all of us, but I love it. His background is, you know, financial background, but he's got a great story around life sciences and how he's formed this new organization. So thank you. First off, I'll probably say thank you about 1,000 times today because I'm so excited to have you. Patrick, welcome to Manage Me Podcast.
Hi, Todd. Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here today and really look forward to connecting with your audience.
Absolutely. So to kick it off, I sometimes get so enthralled with kind of what you're doing that I'll try to pull myself back and hold myself back a bit. But tell us, first off, what you do, what is Novus Proximus? And then I'm going to follow up with, okay, how did you get there? What's your journey? How's your story?
Yeah, thank you. Novus Proximus is a business advisory firm I founded last year. And what we do is transforming the business of healthcare to create disruptive innovation for patients. And I can explain to you a little bit about what that means, but what it really is integrating passion, purpose, and expertise to fulfill our mission of driving business forward in the healthcare space. So all the gains that we make in the healthcare industry and pharmaceuticals specifically is going to equate to benefiting patients. And everything that I do is driven by that purpose of how we can improve the outcomes of patients. And I see opportunities to improve those businesses. So that's what Novus Proximus is. It stands for the new next.
New next. Okay.
New next.
I love it. I love it. Novus Proximus, the new next. Okay. I should have looked that up before we jumped on here. So you've taken your finance background and your pharma, your life science background, and you found some challenges that you can address. And so you formed this organization to go solve those challenges. I love that it's sometimes you'll hear in the business world, you know, well, it's not like we're saving lives. Well, you know, sometimes the net effect is we are. So I love that you're starting with that patient first approach. Very cool.
Yeah. And what really, you know, I started in financial operations in the IT industry, and I kind of moved into helping support customer solutions. And so I understood very early on in my career the value that technology can bring, but how important it is that you put the whole framework together, because people are going to help drive and benefit from that technology. And process is absolutely key. So a big part of what I do is bring the people, process, technology framework together. But once I got into the pharma industry about 15 years ago, I was coming up through finance and through accounting and operations. And that point exactly, once I had that trigger and I realized that everything we did, everything everybody does in a healthcare organization is to support a patient in the end, ultimately. It was about how do I find out how I can improve that? How do I make that better? And that curiosity and that passion for making a difference really drove me into all kinds of places, into the clinical trial sites to figure out how those work. It drove me into the commercial business to understand about marketing and commercialization, and into the competitive realm and understanding other product launches and how those are successful and how and how to plan. And really, that took me to what my greatest strength is the ability to plan and take that plan and execute. Because a plan without execution is not a good one.
Yeah, I agree. I say it probably too much. The world has lots of visionaries and the world has lots of people who get stuff done. You need to have a healthy balance because ultimately it's great to have a vision, great to have people who are creative, but you got to get it done. So there's always that healthy balance. I know I'm gonna kind of lift back the covers a little bit. We've already met and we've already talked and we had a great conversation. So I know a little bit more than the audience knows here. So I'm sort of leading the witness on a couple of these questions, but there's a particular story around the whole COVID challenge that you really, I think from what you just talked about, kind of that moment in time where you really, the light bulb went off and you said, this is a big change. I can leverage this. I can use this. There's lessons that other companies should know. Can you tell us a little bit about that? That COVID, that big moment where you, speaking of planning, right? You have some really great thoughts around how you helped your company you were with.
Yeah, I think, especially in the pharmaceutical business, the clinical trials can be 7 years in length. And so you're constantly looking out very far on the horizon. And at the end of the day, you're going to be successful and get approval for the product, or you're going to get approval for the product. That doesn't actually guarantee success, or you're not going to get approved and you're going back to the drawing board. So, there isn't this middle ground. It's either a pass or fail at launch. And then the story isn't fully written at that point either. So the more and more I studied that and deployed that across small and large organizations, public, private, you start to realize, okay, there's key steps along the way. And these key timelines and milestones that are pivot points. And I started coming up with this concept of, different contingency plans, and some organizations call it risks and opportunities, but how do you make an ambiguous risk less ambiguous and more finite and controllable, right? That's risk mitigation, risk management. And the same thing, how do you take an opportunity and accentuate that possibility and bring it to reality, right? And so that way of thinking really permeated everything I did in my life from work, but also into the personal realm, where I'd say, if I do this or I do that, I'm going to have a different outcome. And it's something as simple as we all know it, but unless you consciously kind of tackle down on a regular basis, maybe your awareness isn't that high on it. So this whole concept of, how do you take a contingency plan and make it, your execution or your exit strategy too, depending on what you're looking to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, that healthy balance, right? You got to run the business today, but you have to be looking into the future and what are the different options and pathways that are possible to unfold. How do you measure? How do you know what those are? How do you measure what the impact might be, and then how do you plan around that? Right? If I'm it's a great analogy, or not even analogy, great real time. If I'm producing a drug or testing with a drug, tests could take years and years and years. So you're planning far out, and then you don't know the outcome, like you mentioned, could be success, gets approved, and then you're just starting really to launch that business. And so you have all those activities to do, and so you have to be ready for that. And then you might get shot down and start over, right? That's challenging.
Yeah, and a lot of companies, I think especially earlier on, if you're lucky enough to have a product that has good you know, safety signals and good clinical signals, efficacy. And you know, it's in an area that's really going to help mankind, humankind. I think then it's all about how do we take the best shot on goal to bring it to market? And you know, how do you align the interests of all the stakeholders, whether you're a public company or a private company? There's totally different stakeholders, and keeping all those teams aligned is very, very challenging, and likely they all have different expectations or of success and or what they're looking to achieve. And I think in this day and age, it's particularly important to listen to those voices and make sure, you know, you're delivering on the expectations, because bringing them together for congruency.
Right. Yeah. That is an art and a science all in one, managing all your stakeholders, you know, communicating the good and the bad, making sure that everyone's aware. You know, human instinct is if, you know, I'll take two data points and connect them, even though they may not be related, right? If I don't know all the information, the human instinct is to start to form the story that I'm hearing based on any shred of information that I have. So important to continue to communicate what's happening, what's good. But then to your point, and here's the plan, right? Here's the contingency planning that we're doing, knowing what we know today, but looking at forward and understanding what could possibly happen in the future. So that boils down, that's your expertise, is that kind of, I'll just call it future state management.
Yeah, and doing that, you know, transcending now for a moment from the corporate world into the personal world is, you know, are any of us happy with our lives? Are we happy with our careers? Are we happy with our circumstances? And so, you know, the more and more I kind of was doing this for work, the more and more I was applying it for home. And I found a set of circumstances that I needed to change. And I think we, all of us in many ways are not the same as we were in 2019, and some are figuring it out still, and some have figured it out, but it gave us, you know, the last few years of the pandemic gave us this really, this time back in our lives to be introspective, to figure out what our future holds. And some have kept those as a contingency plan, and some have executed on those to make it their reality, right?
Right.
And so I think, what's the difference, whether it's work or home, between keeping the contingency plan and what is the trigger to make it executable?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it happens. Yeah, like you said, you people like yourself do this for a living, but also there's living to do this, right? There's, you know, the other side of it is, you know, I can manage the contingency planning and execution and exit strategy for my business, but also equally as important, if not more important, is I need to do this for myself and or my family on what is our plan? What is our contingency plan? What are all the variables that could possibly happen in our lives, looking out in a reasonable time frame? And, you know, understanding, that's the key, understanding, and then planning around that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, for many people that are at these crossroads, for me, it was looking for a pretty big shift in my geography from up in the Northeast to the Southeast. And right. And like many others that have migrated over the last few years, it's all for a variety of different reasons. And that's what makes it so hard to give advice as to what's the right place for somebody. Because all the criteria is different. And also circumstances are changing all the time, right? So I've used analogies like reviews on the internet. They're really only good for that moment in time. Just like, you know, the landscape you're leaving and the landscape you're going to change completely. And companies, right? When you're there, it looks one way. When you're not there, it looks another way. And by the way, that happened before you. And you know, that's also transcends into history, right? So history looked different when it was in real time versus when it's in the rearview mirror.
Right. Yeah. I know we both, you know, over the last few years have made a move from the Northeast area to the Southeast area. for various reasons. And, you know, I'm sure I have friends and family and acquaintances that are like, why would he do that? You know, and there's a laundry list of reasons, and it was not easy and it was super challenging, but it's like, just like you said, looking back history, a couple years later, best thing we ever did.
Yeah. So you were at a crossroads to that decision, like I was at a crossroads to that decision. But, you know, maybe what was the key point that tipped it, you know, to you going?
Great question. Aren't I supposed to ask the question? No, I'm just kidding. Sorry. I love it. No, it's a great question. And for me, it might be, like we said, might be different for everybody. For me, I'll just lump it into, I felt stuck. I felt I needed, both, you know, personally and professionally, I needed to make a change. This was, yes, a geography change, which was super, super impactful, but it was a big career change, family lifestyle change. Just, it was a big moment to place myself in a different geography, which impacted a whole bunch of other things. Again, was not easy picking up your two teenage daughters in the middle of high school career and, you know, wife and dog and all that stuff. But it was absolutely the best move ever.
Yeah. And I think in there is the difference between when you take something from a contingency plan to make it executable, right? And sometimes it's an exit strategy. So for you, it was an exit from the, you know, the life you knew, and for me too, and into, you know, an entrance into a new life. But it was something, you know, that I planned, that you planned. And at the end of the day, you have to make a decision. And right. I think that's what I see, and that's what I help companies with today, is how do you go from a good plan to making a good decision? And and boy, you want to make sure you get that right before you pull the trigger, but there's so much anxiety in the pulling the trigger, right?
Right. You know, and more, I know there's, I've always realized this, but it seems to be just reminding myself and reminding others of this, is you can plan and think you have the most perfect plan in the world. I think we talked about this, you know, and I think it was Mike Tyson that said, you can have the perfect plan until you step in the ring and you get punched in the face, right? So there's a certain amount of planning and contingency planning and risk management and strategy, but the real key is taking that first step, right? So it's a first step of your plan, but know that your plan absolutely will not be perfect. I don't think I've ever had any plan, whether it's personal or professional, go exactly how I thought it was going to be. So take that first step and continue down that road until you hit that, oh, didn't realize that was going to be part of my plan. And then you do some more rearranging and replanning and you continue on. But you mentioned it, the key is action, is taking that step. And I'm putting words in your mouth, so correct me if I'm wrong, but one of your strengths is fleshing out this whole plan, this contingency planning or exit strategy, but helping the organizations or the individual or the teams take that first step with that plan. So sort of, okay, we've got a plan. We're going to guide you. Here we go.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And maybe before I get into just a little bit of how I do that, a little bit about the Mike Tyson analogy, right? So yeah, if Mike Tyson hits you, you're probably going to be unconscious, but you know ahead of time before you're fighting him, I'm going to get hit and I'm going to be unconscious, or I'm going to dodge and counter, or I'm just going to try and run around the whole time and frustrate him. And so I think those are all different outcomes. And so you could start to assess those outcomes and say, what is the most likely? And then what's going to happen when that happens, right? That's how you start getting into contingency plan. So I think it's probably highly likely that he is going to hit me. Well, that's okay. That's a 75% chance of happening. Whereas me dodging him and countering is probably 5%, right? And so for the 75% chance, what am I going to do then when I hit the ground? You know, I'm going to be unconscious and I won't be in control, or I'll be conscious and I'll stay down, or I'll be conscious and I'm going to get up and probably get knocked back down again. So, right. You know, you get these decision trees and they start to turn into, okay, if thens and the contingency plans. By the time those things happen, you're a lot less surprised. you've thought about them. And when you can step back and think about them, there's less anxiety when they happen because you already knew it was going to happen. And so I get a lot of times folks coming back to me and saying, you know, you said this was going to happen. You're right. But, you know, how did you know? And I said, well, I assessed the landscape of what could happen and what the events were telling me. And there's a lot more signals around us or in our business that we're always paying attention to because there's all this noise all the time that dampens those things. But being prepared is really key.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm not comparing here, Patrick, but I actually had someone years ago. The previous, I took over for a previous leader who I never met. Apparently that leader was very vocal, very passionate. I don't know if that's the right word, but about 2 or 3 months into my tenure, one of the kind of the more senior people that were there came to me and said, do you not care? Like, what? How come you're not, you know, yelling and screaming? And, you know, when someone says something, I'm like, well, first of all, that's not my style. Second of all, my vocal range, you know, the being louder doesn't make me like more smart or better off. It's just louder. You'll notice that I'm saying the same things, but I'm just saying them. She's like, you're so calm all the time. I'm like, well, that's just an outward appearance. And I said, the other thing is I knew this was going to happen. I knew this was going to get to an argument. I knew this was going to be a situation where I was going to have to manage it. And instead of escalating it, I just dealt with it because I knew it was going to happen. And I knew already what they were most likely going to ask me or yell at me for. And I knew what my multiple responses based on what I thought they may say. I kind of knew the scenario beforehand. And it was an interesting conversation. And I found that woman would watch me in future. I would like be in a meeting and she would be watching me. I think she was trying to read me whether I knew what the other person was going to say. Now, I can't say I always knew what they were going to say. I can't say that, but kind of same along lines of, you know, Mike Tyson or contingency planning. You know, when I'm going into a meeting, which I know might be contentious, okay, here are the scenarios that could possibly play out. Here's how I'm going to handle each one of those.
Yeah, and I think that happens more than people realize, right? But you're using other instincts too. So, you know, you're using visual cues and audible cues and other things like that, that are creating a picture and you're assessing, you know, the potential outcomes and you're in the driver's seat. Right. So you're controlling, you know, to a large extent what the future is going to be. And that's what I have brought to companies is the more you can, you know, sometimes it's analyzing data. It's okay. We have a bunch of data across the organization. It's disconnected. How do we connect it to make sense of it and tell a story? And then what is that, you know, what can happen, right? And then there's market research that you can add into, you know, on top of the data. Now you start, you know, piling up other things and you can change and alter strategy. And, you know, I get a lot of folks saying, okay, well, you know, this is strategy, that's strategy, but what are you looking to be the outcome? Overall, and how do you guide toward that? That's, you know, that in my mind is the organizational strategy. But then you have to do the really tough things in the execution, right? Like you had to get up and move. I had to get up and move. I had to start, you know, everything, the kids in a new school, just like you did, and, you know, do difficult things in a difficult way. But there's also a lot of growth in there.
Oh, yeah.
Tremendous. But a lot of people get frozen at that point of the, whether in business or in personal, of we know the potential outcomes, but we have to drive this. We have to make a decision.
Right. It's that investment in yourself, right? And it's doing those hard things, right? Doing hard things is how you invest in yourself. I just said this to my oldest daughter a couple of weeks ago. I've never had any learning experience that wasn't hard, right? If it was really easy, I probably didn't learn that much. Yep. And almost all my life challenges have been really difficult, but I've also learned the most from them. So it is, you have to almost look at it as an investment in yourself. I'm going to do these hard things, but and by the way, the most successful things, at least so far in my life, have never been the easy things. The most successful things have always been the hardest things.
Yeah. And they are, and you go through that growth and the learning and challenge yourself. And I think that's for, you know, when I've been a part of leading large scale transformation in organizations, it always starts with, you know, the people, right? The people are going to have to do hard things. They're going to have to execute on multiple deliverables. They're going to have to stretch themselves into uncomfortable territory, you know, develop skill sets that aren't there, be open to change. And I think that is a really key part of organizational transformation too, right? The plan is one thing. When you're going to execute it, how you do it? Well, you got to bring the people and they got to bring their game, and you got to bring the right structure to do that. And you know, the interesting part that we're all finding ourselves in, you're seeing AI, artificial intelligence, more and more on TV the last few months, but it's been in the works for years.
Right.
And what is it going to do? It's going to help us really make, take analytics, take data, turn them into analytics and make them predictive, drive insights. And sometimes it's just going to serve it up for you on a platter, but sometimes it'll be cold. You know, yeah. So you have to figure out, do I have to heat it up or am I going to eat it cold?
Yeah, it's funny. While the technology of AI and machine learning is accelerating rapidly, like you said, we didn't call it AI or machine learning, but it's been here for many, many years. You know, just even simple marketing, when you walked up to an ATM and, you know, okay, when you put your card in, they know who you are. You know, whether you have only a checking account or whether you have a checking account and a mortgage. And so they start filtering through the ads that they're going to put up and on that ATM in front of you based on, okay, we know if you have a checking account but not a mortgage, we're going to put a mortgage up because there's a high propensity that you might want a mortgage. And in a way, that's artificial intelligence somewhat, right? It's learning from the data and your behavior being, I have just a checking account. Or maybe a checking account and a credit card. And so anyway, it's been with us for a long time. I think it's getting traction because the technology is evolving, but also because we're starting to zero in on calling it something, naming it something called AI or machine learning.
Yeah. And back to, you know, tie it into our earlier part of the conversation, you're using all those different senses that you have to analyze, you know, situations. Well, it's using all of its open code and analyzing large, you know, millions, billions, trillions lines of data and environment to figure out what happened next. And then how does it turn it into something that could or will happen in the future? So everything you did in that moment to assess that situation, it's doing, right? And so we're going to have to say, okay, well, if we have to do less of that and we're going to rely on that more, then what do we do? But you know, humans are going to have to evolve around the technology and the robots, because you know they're going to do a lot of that heavy lifting for us.
Yep.
But there's danger in that too.
Yeah. How much room we give the artificial intelligence to grow and evolve, right? But to your point, you know, there's been these technology evolutions. Oh gosh, there's so many. I mean, where do we start? Like when the first radio was put in a vehicle, it was like heresy. Like you can't drive a car and listen to the radio. You can't do the two things at the same time. Well, now there's movies and video and all sorts of distracting things in your vehicle. But way back when they wanted to put an AM radio in the dashboard of a car, I don't even know what car it was. I was going to say Model T. I don't even know if it was that early, but that was heresy. So there's the technology evolutions. And I'm sure when the calculator first came out, right, got, you know, it overwrote the abacus, right, or whatever it was, the previous technology, you know, people, I don't know if it was massively disruptive and, you know, took bean counters out of, literally bean counters out of action. And now they had calculators. I have no idea, but we go through these patterns of evolution, and there's more than enough other work or areas for humans to focus on, I think. But yeah, it is scary when you're going through that, you know, through that, yeah, technology evolution.
Just in the finance world, you know, I've been around long enough to go from Lotus 1-2-3,
oh, yeah,
to Excel, right? Before Excel was the standard.
Right.
And then that innovation that Excel brought in, in some ways overly simplified it and expanded the capabilities, almost to the point where I think there's still so many of them that aren't even leveraged. Right. And now you get into these, you know, no code, low code technologies, some of which I've deployed, that now take that and iterate with artificial intelligence. And now they're, you know, the processes, the data capture is repeatable, and you don't even have to use Excel. And then it's serving it up to you in real time in different platforms and analyzing it and giving you different recommendations. I mean, we're still at the point where they're recommendations and we have to validate them. And then we have to make the right one. But the decision-making part is still just as difficult today more than ever for a lot of folks. So it's another tool that's going to greatly innovate, you know, our lives, but we're not exactly all sure yet. But like you said, so whether it's the AM radio to the 8-track to the cassette to the CDs in the car, no CDs in the car anymore.
Right.
Now it's satellite.
It's all satellite streaming. Yeah. So this technology, I don't mean to downplay it. It's you know, in the moment, it's super impactful. But when you look back at, you know, AM, FM, cassette, 8-track, you know, that evolution, it almost kind of looks silly. Like, oh, remember when, you know, 8-track or whatever? Yeah, I'm sure we'll look back at AI and machine learning, I would hope, years from now, and say, wow, what a positive impact it has on, you know, areas that CAT scans and x-rays and kind of reading those, right? Taking the human element out. There's, I'm sure, billions, if not trillions of x-rays and CAT scans and MRIs that computers can ingest, and we can tell it, you know, this scan has cancer here. And so it will learn this is what cancer looks like, and I would imagine, I'm guessing because I'm not in the medical field, but would be way more accurate than a human being who is maybe, you know, 5 o'clock on a Friday, super stressed, has read, you know, 100 MRI scans that day. The machine doesn't care. And so might possibly be more accurate. So there's some positive aspects to this too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So in the medical field, I mean, there's technology today that can predict early onset of Alzheimer's with 80% accuracy.
Wow.
In clinical network, health networks and institutions, right? I mean, the applications are endless. The chances are that you will find the AI in part of your daily life that you don't even realize. Whether, you know, for doctors, you're going to a doctor visit and you're getting a form that you're entering some information in. That's part of that is robotic process automation, right? But there's another part of that that's AI that's taking all of that information and synthesizing it and driving insights for somebody that, you know, in a consumable way, right? Sure. So it already is a part of our lives today, but we still have to figure out how to master it. And we will someday. We'll go, remember when you used to go to the library to go check out books or do research and, you know, Encyclopedia Britannica,
right.
or remember when you used to have to go to the internet and validate the resources, the sources there, right? Now we remember when we used to do essays. We used to write essays ourselves.
Right.
It's all coming.
It's all, yeah. I have actually had the chance to use ChatGPT a bit, and it is, you know, the better the prompt that you give it, the better the output you get. But wow, it's pretty cool. It is amazing.
Yeah. And so all these things kept together have us helping to move from, you know, contingency plan to execution, whether it's our lives, our daily lives or our work lives.
Right. So, you know, whether you're an individual or an organization or a company that has a product, you should be thinking about the AI and machine learning and the contingency planning of, will it have an impact on my organization, on my product, on my services, on my solutions? Yes or no? Okay, if it does, what are the options? How could it impact? If it doesn't, would it at some point? You know, that's that whole thinking through that process and planning for that and having those plans in place and, you know, being able to manage those as those events come up.
And just like Mike Tyson, it is going to hit you in the face. So we're going to find ourselves down on the mat. And then the next thing is do we get up and embrace it, or do we let it take over? And I can tell you what, you don't want to stay down. So you're going to get up and you're going to find out how to win.
Absolutely. So tell me about, I know you work with multiple clients. Tell me about your you know, sometimes I'll ask the question, if you had a magic wand, you could wave the, you know, the ideal client that you work with, what would that be like? Maybe that's part of the question, but tell me about, you know, either that or clients you work with, or how you'd best work with your, some of the folks you work with.
I go back to, my family goes back 12 generations of veterans and 5 generations of firefighters.
Quick clarification. Patrick, after we stopped recording, reminded me that it's not 12 generations in my family tree. It's actually 8, but still dating all the way back to Washington's Army.
And, wow. You know, whether you're, let's say you take a firefighter, you don't need a firefighter per se, unless you have a fire. Right. And so I think, you know, it's great to talk to folks and get things on the radar and talk about contingency planning. But I think, you know, there's a lot of folks out there today more than ever, and I think there will be coming, that say, okay, I got a fire. I see smoke, you know, or I see smoke. I know there's a fire. You know, tell me where the fire is. Tell me how to put it out. Because when you smell that smoke, you don't know where it is.
Right.
I've been on enough calls with my father, you know, who's a fire chief, volunteer fire chief, in his spare time, to know that, you know, when you're going to the movies and you get a phone call and you say, okay, we're not going to the movies anymore. And we're going there and you see him changing in the car and running into his house. He doesn't know where the fire is.
Right.
You know, he doesn't know if there's people in there, if there's pets in there. He doesn't know if there's a gas leak. I mean, so, you know, you don't, that's the opposite of contingency planning.
Right.
But when you do that, he's got to get out. He's got to save the people in there, neutralize the fire, and he's got to get out himself. And so I liken that to, you know, the customers that find me are the ones that say, you know what, there's smoke. I need help. Help me find it. Help me put it out, neutralize it, and help me get to safety. And yeah. I think in the business world, it's not just in pharma, although pharma's got a lot of specific kind of regulation and compliance, but that's across any industry. And some of them are on fire more today than others. I think the Inflation Reduction Act of last year is really going to impact pharmaceutical manufacturers and have a spillover effect on the whole healthcare industry in the coming years. But you look at the advent of AI. And code generation, and already those impacts that are being felt across the technology sector. And a lot of those companies you're hearing say that they overhired, you know, at a time of need during the pandemic and this great demand. But on the other hand, we are getting much more efficient mm-hmm. through the deployment of those technologies. So, you know, you wonder where the tipping point is between, you know, how much of this is going to be a durable reduction in resources.
Right. Yeah. Very, very good point. Very good point. Be nice and do good. Kind of coming back to your original conversation around how you think about what you do and the impact it has to the ultimate customer, right? Be nice and do good, right? As long as we're focused on, you know, helping others and doing good, that's the output that we want. More people need to think that way.
Absolutely. I think, you know, every day, how can I help somebody in some way? And if we all leave this world in you know, any project, any company, any team, any relationship in a better way than we did before, then that's a sustainable way, then that's progress. And if we all just measure progress and do good, we're going to wind up in a much better place. And, but it does take hard work to get there because it's been a tough last few years. So we got a lot of work to do.
Absolutely. So if someone is listening and they think they might smell smoke, or they might want to tell someone in the organization, hey, I think I smell smoke. And I think I know someone who might be able to help us. How do they contact Novus Proximus? What's the best way for folks to reach out to you?
Yeah, thank you. It's either www.novusproximus.com, NovusProximus.com, or you know, through email info@novusproximus.com. But I'm pretty sure if you're looking for us, you'll be able to find us, or we'll find you.
Awesome. And I'll put this all in the podcast notes for people. So don't have to go rewind and write that down and all that stuff. It's in the episode notes. Patrick, one last question. I've totally ripped this off from another podcast, but I'm starting to ask all my guests this at the end of our episode. Manage Me Coaching is my practice. When you hear Manage Me Coaching, what does that mean to you?
How do you manage me to be better, right? How do you help me be a better worker, a better spouse, a better parent, more successful in life, leaving, doing better, making that sustainable difference? So how do I let you manage me to be a better human? That's awesome. Very important to me.
Awesome. I love it. Perfect. Thank you. All right. Well, I will, like I said, put all of this information in the episode notes. I want to thank you again, Patrick. Love meeting you. Glad we connected. Really, really admire what you're doing here. Wish you the best of luck as you start to really explode on this journey and starting to help these organizations in their change and their planning and their journey, as well as the execution. So I look forward to hearing, you know, maybe I'll ask you if we can leave that door open, have you come back maybe at some time in another episode and tell us all the great things that are happening down the road.
Yeah. Thank you, Ty. I really enjoyed our conversation and I would love to be back and hope this conversation is very helpful for your audience as well as mine. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, Patrick.
With Allison Self-Marketing, you are more than just another client. Our goal is to bring your story to life through branding, strategy, print and digital ads, PR, and community outreach. Diversity is reflected not only in our team, but also in the concepts and ideas we bring to the table to market your business. We are ink slingers, idea bringers, scribblers, and strategists. We are Self. To learn more about how we can grow your business, visit AllisonSelfMarketing.com.
Thanks for listening today. It's always great to share ideas and also get feedback from you. So please send me an email at managemepodcast@gmail.com. Visit my website, manageme.godaddysites.com. And both those areas, whether it's email or website, you can send me questions, you can refer me to sponsors, and I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to have you as a guest. I'd love to hear your thoughts around whether the guests we're having and the topics we're having are working for you, and would love to hear anything that you'd like to hear on the upcoming podcast. Thanks again for listening and appreciate it.